everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Bulldog Hour. Captain Russ alongside. Here was always Intel 3. CG will take over, bring you to 6 o'clock. No play-by-play tonight, but big games coming up over the weekend. First of all, for the Fresno State women, they are playing this evening in the reciprocal home-and-home routine. When the men are home, the women are on the road against the same team in conference. But because the men played on a Tuesday, the women will play tonight in Logan, and that game is available through the Mountain West Network digital offering. Also, if you have the stadium app, you can get it there as well to keep up with that. For the men, afternoon game coming up in Las Vegas on Saturday. Paul and Q will be at the Thomas and Mack, 1:15, the pre and 2 o'clock. The game's also on ESPN3. We'll talk to Q about what happened last night, and then a special visit with Jackson today because signing day, which is, as we've talked, radically different right now than it used to be. This used to be the day. Everybody waited for the first Wednesday in February for all the signees for college football, but the early signing day in December has really changed a lot of things, but still news of relevance for Fresno State. So Jackson will join us around 2:35 today, and we will put a bow on the entirety of the recruiting class, what we talked about in December, and also the extra slots that were still available and what Fresno State did today. And I know there has been some news already in that regard. So that's the lineup today. Bulldog basketball, Bulldog football. Also, you might have heard on the SportsCenter update, Tyler Johnson has been traded. Now, we have talked over and over again about Tyler coming back to the West Coast. I thought he'd fit real nice with the Warriors because Tyler is one of those missing pieces of the puzzle kind of players. He's not a guy you're going to build your entire franchise around, but he can certainly be someone that has the last or close to the last bit of talent to fill out your roster that can be critically important. He is that kind of role player. To see him be dealt to Phoenix makes you wonder because the Suns are still a long way away from being a good team. Tyler making $19 million this year, $20 million next year. You knew that the Heat, who, by the way, are on the West Coast, they won last night in Portland. They will be in Oakland a little bit later in the week. You know that Pat Riley and company wanted to get out from under that contract. I can't imagine that that is something that Phoenix is doing. Just put Tyler there when they don't have a lot. They have young talent like Ayton, et cetera, but they do not have a ready-made team around him. So I would not be surprised with the signing deadline or the trading deadline tomorrow at noon our time, and Darryl will be with me for the full hour tomorrow at 2. Wouldn't be surprised if Tyler is on the move again. We will see, but he's definitely going from Miami to Phoenix, and then we'll see how long he's going to be a Sun. All right, a lot of basketball to talk about with our good friend. It is Coach Q coming aboard, as always, on a Wednesday. Talk about the exciting but difficult loss last night because the Bulldogs were very close but couldn't quite get over the hump. Q, how you doing, my friend?
Doing well, Tony. I'm in the city trying to navigate it and wish I was sitting in that new arena that will be done at some point. But right now I'm driving on rocky roads and trying to fight construction.
Well, all I know is that they want to put a $10 toll on Lombard Street, so anything is possible. And they're calling the new arena, I thought it was supposed to be the Chase Center. It's called the ATM because it's a license to print money. That's what they're saying. So they're gonna, and where they're headed in luxury tax land, they're going to need it. That's for sure.
Yeah, sure.
Q, I want to start with our good pal Greg South Valley, of course, wrote newspaper-wise for years and years in Hanford and always been a South Valley resident. He had emailed in a couple of days ago and said, hey, you know what, ask Q the next time you talk to him, which he knew would be Wednesday, about the slow starts for Fresno State basketball. Now, it turned out again last night, another slow start. The only thing about last night, Mark, the Bulldogs caught him with plenty of time to go, so it's not like a mad dash where they ran out of time, or we talked about the NBA, right? You're down 20, you make a mad dash, and the minute you catch up because of all the energy you expended, you fall right back. Bulldogs caught him. They had plenty of time, so the slow start is not what cost him the game last night. But just the factor that we have seen over and over again, any particular reason for this team being so slow out of the gate in this last handful of games?
You know, it might be defensively, trying to guard other teams' actions I think that's what Coach Hudson alluded to. He in the post game press conference was that they've got to get their best players out there. And sometimes when I hear best players, I naturally think offense, but it could mean defensively. You've got to be able to guard the other team's actions and play with intensity. And I think that may be what he's referring to is defending. I like what he's saying. You got to find a way to start off dominating teams defensively. You know, sometimes it can be very challenging when you have an undersized team. But, you know, his teams play hard, and they have shown that they can defend. I wonder what he's going to do to jumpstart that, because it has been a systemic issue for the Dawgs as of late.
No question, and they can't afford, on the road in particular, at Thomas and Mack, to get down early, because it's really tough to pull yourself back in on the road. Mark, yeah. I want to oversimplify last night, okay, because...
Okay.
And then we'll shoot holes in it and move on. But I'll put it up there. You know, we always talk in football about the half a dozen plays that decide most games. Make the majority of them, you win. If you don't, you lose. And you could point to that. But look at the conference title games, for goodness sake, right? The Chiefs can tell you, they point to one game, that game against the Patriots, and one play, Deport lining up offside. If he doesn't do that... The INT, which had nothing to do, incidentally, with D. Ford being in the neutral zone, that was the other side of the formation, then they kneel on it, and Pat Mahomes got to talk to everybody for the Super Bowl, right? New Orleans?
Right.
They look at the pass interference call that wasn't called, and they say, okay, that's the game. It is an oversimplification, but it is true in football that most of the time, those half a dozen plays, the majority go your way, you win. If not, you lose. Last night, through all the nuances of the game, the bottom line late is this. Utah State got a big three from Quinn Taylor, a guy who is probably the fourth option when it comes to shooting threes on that team. The guy who had that layup over his head at the end of the game that could have won the game in Logan. That's how close that game was. And they got the right guy, Merrill, to the line for four critical throws down the stretch. So do you say that those small groups of plays that you have to have go your way, it was just those going the other direction that cost the Bulldogs the game, or is that way too simple in a view of that game last night?
Well, Tony, I really like the way you're going with this. So we could all take those great examples that you just used, and you can say, yes, that cost them the game. You can also put a couple of examples of Fresno State starts the game, Deshaun Taylor drives hard, gets fouled, doesn't call, they don't get the call. And there's a whole night of Fresno State getting grabbed, bumped, you know, reached on, and there's no fouls called. So now you're not in one-on-ones or shooting free throws. The other team has no foul trouble issues. And then late at the game, they're able to foul you three times and eat up your clock for you at home. You know, yeah. I think that sometimes it's the simple things like you're talking about that really cost you the games. And as officials, if they get those calls, those driving calls, Utah State could not stay in front of Fresno State's guards. But they were allowed to foul, they didn't get, you know, the calls weren't made. And then late in the game, you see how it shows up. So not only you lose on free throw opportunities throughout the games and better possessions and getting better shots during the game, during the course of the game, at the end of the game, when you still have a chance to win it, they can foul you three times and take your clock down.
Yeah, I want to touch upon that, Q. And by the way, we had talked yesterday when Fresno State won in Logan. The Bulldogs were just 3 of 6 in the line, for goodness sake, and they were 7 of 8 last night. Not a lot of opportunities. But I know there are things about the college game that do not equate to the NBA, and nor should they have the same rules. But one of the things the NBA, as you know, Q, has had for years and years is no matter what the foul total might be of the 5 per quarter before you're over the limit in the NBA, in the last 2 minutes, the second foul in the last 2 minutes mandatorily is free throws. And I do believe to avoid the constant fouling, the deliberate fouling late, which I think the colleges need to go to that. I don't care if you've only committed 2 fouls down the stretch inside of 2 minutes. I think a second foul inside of 2 has to be throws. How do you feel about that?
Well, I thought about that, but, you know, there's something to be said to when you look at a game like last night, and if you talk to the officials that we know, you know, all around town, they'll tell you they can make a case of a foul on every possession, practically. So, you know, things are happening, infractions are happening. They just may not be getting called. I just thought last night was a simple case of you could see that happening where, you know, if you don't get those calls early, they really hurt you towards the end of the game, and it really puts you at a disadvantage. And, you know, there may be something worth looking at, some variation of that rule for the college game.
Well, I bring up the 7 of 8 in the first half. Okay, that was 3 of 6 overall there. But 11 of 14, but Q, again, you're telling me that 7 of 8, in your opinion, in the first half for Fresno State should have been what? At least half a dozen throws? I mean, is that your feeling about this?
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like, you know, in the first half, well, what happens is I'm going to stay on that, but not using the same way. I
All
look
right.
at when your first play, I used to tell my point guard, if I knew I had an advantage with him, first play of the game off the tip, act like you're calling some phony play and just do what you love to do anyway, drive it a hole. If they take a charge, fine. You know, try to jump stop and avoid it. But just go the whole hard. Let's see if somebody comes over and fouls you. Let's see where the referees are at right off the bat. And I thought last night when I think it was DT that went to the hole, I thought he got fouled. And then the whole team became passive because now they don't think they're going to get those calls going to the hole. And it changes how you run your stuff, and it changes your team's aggressiveness or assertiveness on the floor. And I think that's where it costs you. Because
right.
now you're shooting perimeter. You become a perimeter team, and you really need to be an interior team by getting penetration into the key or throwing it into somebody big. And when you can't penetrate and you feel like you're getting grabbed and hacked and it's not going to be a foul called, you quit doing it. So that's where I think it really hurts. I mean, the free throws, yeah, you need those, but it's your mentality, it's your mindset as a team that it could really hurt.
Well, I'll tell you what, and we don't, as you know, like to harp much on the officiating on the show. I will say this, every team in every sport has to adapt to the officials, how they're calling it. And, you know, for Fresno State, it was a game last night. They did not, you know, let's put it this way. First of all, there have been games that you and I have talked about this year where the Bulldogs just haven't played all that well. They've managed to win some of those games, but we pointed to their shortcomings. Colorado State's a great example, right? The Rams got hot, but Fresno State allowed that team to hang around in a way because of the slow start that they should not have. I don't think either team has anything to hang its head about last night. That was a good basketball game between two good teams, and if you didn't have a rooting interest, you're just a college basketball fan in general, you had to enjoy the thing. But there's no question that for the Bulldogs, it was a battle to try to gain control of a game at home, and I want to touch upon what I thought was a key moment in this thing, and that is when the Bulldogs finally were able to get the lead. They caught up pretty quickly, so they got within six by half. They were okay at that point. They took the lead. Now you've got the crowd in the game. And you had, after the two-point lead, the possession, and it was New Williams, I think, had the open three in the corner, right side, and he missed it. And, Q, to me, that was a play where if they get up five, maybe they find a way to run away a bit. Were you concerned when that particular sequence brought it right back to an even game that maybe the Bulldogs were missing their chance, or did you think they would be able to come back and reassert themselves in a way that they did struggle to gain control of the game throughout the 40?
Yeah, I was concerned whether he'd have made that shot, or, and unfortunately he missed it, that they were really struggling to guard some of Utah State's action at the high post, and until the last play of the game, I thought that was their best possession, and the big fella hit a three on them. That was uncharacteristic, but that's
right.
They weren't able to force that all night. And I think that I think defensively, you know, how they defended that, and I think Coach Hudson, you know, highlighted that they need to defend better. Don't give guys confidence. and play with more intensity on the defensive end.
You and I had talked after the game, and Logan, I certainly talked to Paul about it, that the thing that impresses me most about Kata, and there are a lot of things that impress me about this freshman, was not only his awareness of weak side availability from the high post or from the low block, but his really uncanny knack as a young guy to deliver. You and I have kidded around all the time that, you know, you were a guy who could play down low. I was a jump shooter, and as a lot of jump shooters, I wanted that basketball in a position. I didn't want it thrown, you know, between somebody's legs. I got to reach like a hockey goalie to get it, right? I want it in a bounce pass so I can set and go up because it's critically important. Tata not only delivers the basketball, he delivers it in a position where guys can shoot. He is a nightmare to play against. How impressed are you about the way you've seen this young man play?
Well, I'm very impressed, and I think that, you know, he'll have an opportunity to play in the pros for sure, the NBA, and it will just a matter of when. You know, there's some stuff he can definitely work on.
He's got to get stronger, you know that, because guys can body into him, you know, and we saw it again. Bulldogs who were able to make contact were able to score, but otherwise he was terrific.
Yeah, and that's stuff at the NBA level that they work on, and as you know, and that he could get better at. But, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of the tools. I mean, you know, you draft on potential, right?
Yeah.
He definitely has that.
Do you think he's going to be in the league next year? I know he was talking to Kavner after the game, and Jenny had asked him about, you know, how he feels about his own playing. He said, you know, I just feel like I'm getting better and better, and I thought he was even better now than we saw him a few weeks ago. You draft him potential, but if you're Kata, do you stay in school or do you take the one and done now?
And the only time you see me in Utah if I'm him is if I'm playing the Jazz. So.
Oh, man. You and Charles Barkley been having dinner? Is that what you're telling me?
That's right. A real good dinner at that.
Okay. Other than that, okay, I'm just saying. Yeah, so do you think if he came out right now? No, and again, what I was talking about is this: he's a really good weak side defender. But if you can body into him, and Grimes has proven this, you can overpower him. Right now, if you're in the NBA front office and Kata said he's coming out, is he a lottery pick or is he a late first rounder in your opinion? Right now,
he might be a sleeper late. Late first round. Paul Leffler asked me something similar to that, and that's a real valid, you know, point you're both making. But if you're looking at him as a team, what if you draft a kid like that and let him work under DeMarcus Cousins?
Right.
Right? Now you got somebody that can, you know, can rim protect you, change the pace of the game, you know, give you a few minutes a night. Yeah, he's going to add value to someone, whether he comes out this year or next year. But he's, you know, some of what I look at is defensively, can he defend? In the NBA, they don't really throw it down on the block like they once did, right? You know, it's a space five, space four. They're going to, you know, have perimeter game. You know, he's just what the new modern big man looks like. And, you know, he's, you know, depending on how he finishes off from here until March, until hopefully Fresno State beats him in the Mountain West semifinals or something.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that people will be – there were some scouts there last night, and a couple of guys said, hey, man, please don't say nothing about this kid. You know, you know how scouts are. They think they can keep everything quiet, but if you know basketball, you can look at him on the floor. You can just tell he's going someplace. How soon? If you're drafting later in the draft, you want him to come out now so you get him now because, you know, next year the prices go way up.
You can bet that Bob Myers up in the Bay Area is saying, you know what, come out now, be hanging around at 30, and we'll be
right.
Glad to grab you with that guaranteed deal. All right, you bring up the more pertinent question, though, Q, and that is about whether these two teams are going to meet in the semifinals. It would appear to me right now, barring the unforeseen, I mean, most people feel this way, and it's no disrespect to San Diego State or to UNLV, but it looks like what's going to happen is Nevada is going to roll in there as the one seed, and the intense desire for Utah State and Fresno State would be to be on the other side of the bracket, 2 and 3. Is that what we're going to see? Are we going to see Utah State and Fresno State 2 and 3, which means they'll stay away from Nevada till the title game, but the Aggies and the Bulldogs will meet in the semis at Thomas and Mack? Is that your guess?
At this point, that's not only my guess, but my wish. Losing the game last night, you know, it's hard to climb in to be in the first place slot from here, but you want to be either that 2 or 3 slot meeting Nevada on a Saturday. Like Leffler said last night, you're playing with house money in Vegas, if that's the case. And I think after listening to Coach Hutson last night, I feel like what he said in the post game, I feel like that they'll be able to beat Utah, and they play them the third time. You know, Paul mentioned that they've, out of the two games, one apiece, and they've each scored exactly the same amount of points. So this is an evenly matched team going into it. This would be a big matchup on a Friday in Las Vegas, but I think the Dogs would win it. I just feel more confident after hearing Coach Hutson's assessment of the game and how to start off the game and defending better and not giving guys confidence. And then I know that they, you know, in a game at that magnitude, that they're going to get those calls being aggressive in that tournament.
Well, there's no doubt that the three-point shooting last night, critically important. We have talked about the Bulldogs, you know, hitting 50% of their threes and offsetting other problems and still winning. Utah State last night, 12 of 26. They're very, very close to a 50% night. Not just Taylor's shot, but Merrill had a very good game. Miller really hurt Fresno State from three. And the line for Cata, I mean, my goodness, the guy had an 18-point, 15-rebound game with 4 blocks and 6 assists. Other than that, the freshman did nothing to hurt him. But do you look at that and say that there's any part of this Utah State game that was an aberration last night, particularly the number of people they had shooting threes well? I know it's a good shooting team, and I know that Cata sets them up, but do you say it's not likely you're going to see 12 or 26 again from these guys from outside the arc?
Well, you know, I think if you defend better, you can prevent that. If you defend the way you defend it, like Coach Hutson said in the first half, and give guys confidence, yeah, they'll do the same thing to you. I mean, they can shoot, as you mentioned. That's not going to change. Is, you know, can you force them into shooting really, really tough shots where they're going to miss them, and they don't have confidence going in late? And that'll be the challenge going forward. I think we saw a very, very good Utah State team yesterday, and the only way Fresno State can beat them is to defend their action better and get the shooters quicker and just do the stuff in the defensive scheme that Coach Hutt's trying to get them to do. And when you see a team a third time, I think you have a better opportunity to guard that really tough action that they run. And we, quite frankly, Utah State has dominated most of the two games. They've been in control for the majority of these games. So they've been able to dominate. Fresno State had a hot shooting night that first game. And when you, like you said, if you don't hit those bombs, you cannot deodorize the other mistakes that you're making out there.
All of that is true, Q, but I am curious, because you brought up the guard situation, and I do realize it is a legitimate concern if you feel as though, like you said, styles make fights, right? Same thing. If you have an officiating crew, it doesn't mean they're a bad crew, and it doesn't mean they're favoring anybody, but if they decide to call a game a certain way, no question it can inadvertently benefit one team because their skill set might be different than the other. For a Fresno State, if you get an officiating crew that doesn't allow as much contact outside, can you see going up against a Utah State team and saying, okay, look, here's the deal. Our guards can get by these guys. They're a good system team, but we can beat them one-on-one. We can beat them to the glass. We can let Nate Grimes and company clean up on the weak side even after misses, because Cata's going to have to jump out and help all the time. Can you speed the game up enough to say, here's our deal. We are going to attack the rim no matter what early in the game offensively. Defensively, we're going to get out there and we are going to play at the arc. And if they beat us around the three on the drive, we're just going to take even made shots out of the bucket and we are going to force this tempo until we play this game at our tempo no matter what. Can you do that? Is it possible to do that for 40 minutes and beat Utah State, even if they make some layups, by saying you're not going to get threes and you're not going to run with us and we will take transition even out of the bucket? Can you do that?
Well, first, you hit something we hadn't talked about, was transition, and Coach Hutt wants them to run. And I think you need to run them into the ground and run on offense, run hard on offense, and get down there and get some baskets in transition before Cato has a chance to set up and Utah State has a chance to set up. And if you run and you put pressure on that team, you know, all of a sudden they've got to start doing things different defensively, or they're, you know, you messed them up. And certainly it's an advantage for you if your guards are quicker and more skilled off the bounce and Utah State cannot guard you, and you don't have officials allowing that advantage of grabbing, fouling, reaching, or legging players as they go by them. I mean, you know, that gives another team a clear advantage. So I think on the three-point shot, if, like Coach Hutt said, if you don't give guys confidence, you'll be okay. But you really have to run still. Out of everything you talked about, you know, we talked about the defense. This last part that you just mentioned, fast breaking, they've got, you know, and they got to commit to it as players. They got to get out there in the lane and run and get those 8 to 12 easy transition buckets. Even though players are down there, they're unsettled on who they're going to guard. So just attack them and get those points. And I think they've been missing some of those opportunities.
Well, there's no question, Q, and you know this as both a player and a coach, even when you have the advantage, if what happens is you try to be aggressive, but then you back it off because you don't want to take the bad shot, you can end up allowing the defense to go back and play 5-on-5. And at some point, even after a made hoop, if you're going to beat people down the court, you're going to have to attack the rim. And I think it's one of the things that they've learned in two games. And the good news is, like you and Paul are saying, these games could have gone either way. Fresno State easily could have lost in Logan. The Bulldogs easily could have won last night, though Utah State made the plays down the stretch. So these two teams are almost, you know, a flip of the coin. So I will ask you in closing then, since Fresno State has really proven they can beat anybody in conference but Nevada at the moment, are you still circling the 23rd of this month, not so much saying you got to win at the Lawler Center, because you and I both know at this point now Fresno State needs to win the conference tourney if they're going to go to the NC2As, but do you need to prove to yourself that you can beat Nevada? Since everybody else, you know you can beat them. Are you still, if you're a player of Fresno State, saying to yourself, I want to see if we know in our heart of hearts in March we can beat this team? To do that, we got to play them very close at the Lawler Center. Is it that important to know it, or does it not matter for March?
Well, I think, you know, it only helps you to get a big win against a Nevada at their place. I mean, you can't get any better than that if you can do it.
But what about just coming close, though, Q? Just coming close to say, you know what, we know we... Do you think Fresno State really believes they can beat Nevada at the moment? I guess that's the question.
Oh, well, yeah, I think if you went and got Sam Bittner and Deshaun Taylor and Arul and Braxton Huggins, you asked those guys if they think they could beat them, they said, yeah, when we get hot, we'll beat those guys. And that's how they feel. I mean, they're completely confident. They do not back down from it, and I almost think, and I'm not almost, I know they're going to play even better at Nevada. That it's just going to be, you know, a game that's going to be on TV. It's at their place. Deshaun absolutely thrives on that type of environment. And, you know, I think they'll be up for that. I mean, that is a big game against a team number 6 in the nation right now. I think that they're going to go in there thinking, we're going to shoot the lights out. If we get hot, we're going to beat these guys.
And then it begs the final question then, is it fair to say, since we know it is going to come down to March and what happens at the Thomas and Mack the second time around, Bulldogs want to win this Saturday at Thomas and Mack, but they really want to win 3 straight in March. Can we say what happened last night really wasn't that much of a downer, that you take a lot of positives away from playing a a game against a good team, even in your home floor, that could have gone either way. Do you say there are some good things that came out of last night despite the loss?
Yeah, I think Coach Hutt talked about it. He said, you know, I think our guys will finally believe me now that we have to start off the game with more intensity. And, you know, you at the end of the game, you're so close to winning. And he's saying, look, if we do our job in the first half, we start off better, we won't be in a spot like this late in the game. And you'd rather make players believers in late January, early February, because in March everything is for keeps.
Yep. Well, the other good piece of news, despite only getting 14 throws, they did make 11 of 14. And Huggins and Taylor, a perfect 9 for 9 between them. And Q, you and I have talked about this. The Bulldogs, because of their free throw shooting with the guards, if they keep the ball in the hands of the right people late, this should always be an outstanding free throw shooting team. And you and I both know the college game really decided by free throws down the stretch. What, 80% of the time at least?
Especially in a close game, right? So, I mean, you know, that's what it's going to come down to, who has the nerve for it. They're going to keep improving. And the great thing about all this stuff, Tony, is this is a seasoned team comfortable in playing tough, tight games. And that only helps you when you get to March.
And you only get 6 from Grimes in the game. He played 27 minutes, yet you are still there in what was a one-possession game most of the way down the stretch. I know the Bulldogs were down 4 late. That last 3 was really window dressing, unless you were holding a ticket stub from Las Vegas, in which case it was more than just window dressing. Just throwing that out there. That's why I've said don't bet basketball, ladies and gentlemen, because you never know. But the Bulldogs were right there, and I'll tell you what, you in closing, I can't wait for this conference tourney. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game at Lawler, but I can't wait for this group, this Mountain West upper echelon group, to get together in Vegas. That's going to be one hell of a show. That's for sure.
You are correct with that, and it's a long way till then. A lot of tough road games, I think 3 of them.
Including the Thomas and Mack on Saturday. Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so, yep. Yeah. But that Vegas tournament will be, I hope that they get the rematch against Utah on a Friday afternoon. And I've been telling everyone, if you can afford it, show up. That would be a great game to see.
No doubt. And have a safe trip in this weekend. Look forward to an afternoon game at 2 o'clock at the Thomas and Mack against the Rebels. Q, appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks, Tony D. Take care, man.
All right, guys. Mark Q. Jones, take a break. Come back with Jackson. Talk a little bit more in regard to signing day, the final signing day of college football for 18-19 on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:40 here until 3 o'clock. CG will take over, bring you to 6. Again, remind you, Bulldog basketball. 1:15, the tip-off show, 1:30, the pre, 2 o'clock, the start of things at the Thomas and Mack Bulldogs and the Running Rebels on Saturday. Game is also on ESPN3, but I hope you tune in to Paul and Q for the game itself. Coach's show coming up on Thursday from the Elbow Room at 6 o'clock. Right now we want to put the bow on the extended signing day festivities with our good friend Jackson Moore, BarkBar.com. Jackson, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
Doing just fine, Jackson. I want to very quickly mention that Jeff emailed in who said he had to sit through the Golden Knight postgame last night before the Fresno State game was joined in progress on AT&T Sportsnet. The reason for that, Jeff, is that the Sportsnet affiliate, that AT&T affiliate, the first priority, the Vegas Golden Knights, that's the reason for the blackouts we talked about in the area because we're considered in the franchise market. So the hockey team comes first, including the post game. When that happens, what you can check, there are a lot of dash ones, twos, threes, and four. The plus channels will be there. Potentially one of them will have the game start, or there are other AT&T former Root Sports affiliates on, say, DirecTV or Dish or ATT Uverse that might have the start of the game. But I do understand if you were locked into just the one entity, it was very frustrating that not the play-by-play of what happened in the National Hockey League with the Golden Knights, but rather the post game took the first half away, or the first half of the first half away from the Fresno State game. It's just one of those things, and it's unfortunate when they do that. that if you turn to the internet, unless you have the Opera browser or privacy internet, unless you've changed your IP, you are going to get stuck with a geo blackout at that time. Something you have to take a look at each time. It's just something we deal with here when you have games that are considered to be of greater import for the actual channel you're on, and that's what happens. Certainly, that's not how people in Fresno feel. That is how people in Las Vegas evidently feel about it. All right, Jackson, back to football here. Where are we at with the remaining signees? How far did we get today?
Yeah, the Bulldogs added two signees today, about what we expected. There's room for a few more scholarships to take into the off season for either transfers or late recruits that got overlooked. But two official signees announced today. There's one three-star recruit that's still out there that hasn't decided that Fresno State's been in the mix for it. Sounds kind of unlikely at this point that he'll be Fresno State bound, but that's still a possibility. He's a three-star offensive lineman that would certainly be a nice way to put the cherry on top today, but not expecting that one. Had another recruit that kind of came out of the blue off the radar earlier today, Dante Adkins, who's another offensive lineman, and it looks like he's going to be a part of this class either as a preferred walk-on or a blue shirt, but that's kind of where we're at with signing day at this point in the way that recruiting is handled. It's not a big list of guys to talk about. It's just going to be too official right now, and a few more we can speculate on.
Yeah, you and I have talked. It's been a sea change and then some from what we saw up until last year, right? I mean, I don't know that anybody, and we've had this discussion before, Jackson, on and off the air, anybody thought we were going to see what we've seen, which is what happens in December completely, or 99.99% anyway, taking away from February. What has this day now become across the country? Is it still a bigger deal than we're seeing it here?
In most cases, and it's funny because, you know, I also cover San Jose State and Hawaii. Hawaii brought in 8 recruits today, and San Jose State brought in 5, and both of those fan bases have been yawning at the lack of excitement today. And if only they would look at Fresno State, that see only 2 commits today, it's even less. For the Bulldogs, it's partly just because of the available slots that they have. They've really utilized the blue shirts, and they've had to bring in a huge influx of players when Coach Tedford first got here. So the numbers don't align for the Bulldogs to bring in a big class this year in particular, and that's been the case last year, and it may trickle in the next year as well. But for the most part, most recruits are signing in December. It was an overwhelming response last year with the first time. About 3/4 of recruits took advantage of that, and this year we're hearing looked like about 85% of spots filled up at the FBS level in December. So Fresno State is definitely not alone with being a much quieter signing day in February, and there's a much smaller pool of recruits to pick from, even compared to last year at this time.
The overview then for the program at the moment, Jackson, how many slots do they have still available right now if something were to come up?
Yeah, right now, as far as this 2019 class, it is official. You're allowed to have 25, and they haven't used all 25. But again, the blue shirts and everything, it takes up spots. It sounds like the Bulldogs have 2 scholarships left to work with, and then there's still more scholarships in the overall 85, or there's still more spots in the total 105-man roster that they'll have in the fall. There's not a lot. It's less than 10 for sure. But they can certainly have some wiggle room to bring in transfers or that kind of thing over the offseason.
Jackson, what do you expect to see? And you and I will talk about it during spring. Is this, you know, we've talked about over the last several years the quarterbacking situation having a degree of uncertainty. For the first time this last spring, there was no uncertainty. We knew fully well that whatever battles we might have seen as Marcus McMarion came into the program, those were gone, and all it was about was his health and getting ready. Are we back to uncertainty again? No knock against Reyna or anybody else, but is there a clear cut? We've got our quarterback, or is that something you cannot say this year that you could say at this time last year?
I think when August 31st rolls around, we may look back and say we've known all along, but that's certainly not going to be the mentality that this team or the coaching staff takes in the spring. I think Jorge Reyna has the tools to be the quarterback that starts all season long, and I think he's got a good gap against the competition. But, I mean, you've got three other quarterbacks that come back, and they all bring something a little different to the table. You're going to have a new set of eyes at the quarterback coach position, and so there's still a lot of time for things to change, and Reyna certainly has to earn it. But everything I've seen from Reyna, I've really been impressed. I think if he needed to have been called on over the last 2 years, he would have done certainly enough to keep the things rolling how Fresno State did the last 2 years. I don't know if, you know, if McMurrian doesn't come, I don't know if the Bulldogs have the success that they did, but I certainly think Reyna could have been a fill-in, and I don't see much of a drop-off with him coming in next year.
Well, of recent vintage, we've seen the two sides of this. One, Kinnett, terrific guy, came in much ballyhooed late, but it just did not work out for a variety of issues, including his injury. Then the flip side is what happened with McMurrian, who came in, won the team over, won the job, and never looked back from there. Jackson, if I were to say to you there's a possibility we're going to see another kind of situation like that, would you say, given the five-man grouping, it's highly, highly unlikely we're going to see a new face pop up here, quarterbacking-wise, between now and August?
Yeah, for me, I know Fresno State, talking to Coach DeBoer and knowing what Coach Tedford saw in Reyna originally, they really liked him and thought that he could be the guy, and I think they're very thankful that he was gracious enough to take that redshirt year and sit out and wait his turn. For that reason, I don't see them going out and searching for a graduate transfer or anything like that. But, you know, if the right quarterback came to them and approached them that was talented enough to knock off Reyna or have 2 years like McMurrian did to look towards the future, you know, that's something that they may have to consider. And if there's room, you know, the Bulldogs are only going to have four quarterbacks as it's slated right now. So I imagine we'll see at the very least a walk-on bring them up to five. But I wouldn't count it out. You never know if, with Coach Tedford's connections, you may get someone that's been sitting the bench at a Power 5 program or looking for another spot that might be too good to pass up.
Well, that's exactly the point. You have the well-deserved reputation of Jeff Tedford as a quarterbacking guru, and we've seen it happen where guys have come to the NFL and not have been as good, and that actually upped Jeff's stock even more, right? Because it told you that what he was doing collegiately really brought everything out and then some. And I'm not talking about Aaron Rodgers. I'm talking about the Akili Smiths of the world, all right? You also then have what you're talking about, Jeff's reputation. Everybody knows it. And then you've got guys that, understandably, Jalen Hurts is an example of this. Not that Jalen Hurts was coming here. But, Jackson, the clock is ticking, and you're not going to sit and wait, right? If your dreams are to play in the National Football League or your dreams are to show at the biggest level collegiately that you can play, you are not going to hold the clipboard. It just doesn't happen anymore, does it?
Right. And so if you've only got 1 year and you have to go up against Jorge Reyna this offseason, particularly only in the fall, most likely, then no one's going to enroll at this point of the year. That's probably not a good bet. But if someone maybe has 2 years like McMurrian did, that might be something to consider. Fresno State's got the three returning youngsters that haven't played at all. And we have Jaden Casey, who's committed for 2020, but no proven players outside of Reyna at this point in the immediate future.
Right. All right, last two things for you, and I will talk, of course, as usual, on Friday. Appreciate your extra time today on this monster signing day that was something that just quaked the entirety of the college football world. Matter of fact, the College Football Live guys took time out to bag on the Pac-12 again. So that tells you every day. We can call that Wednesday because that's what happens every day. Jackson, if I were to ask you biggest need now going into the spring, what would you say?
Well, you know, you asked me this before, and it was offensive line, and I think they touched on that today. Alex Schmidt is one of the two signees that they got today. He's really the only new commit. The other one is Peyton Dixon, who committed in December and finally signed on the dotted line today, the running back from Nevada. But Schmidt does a good job of bridging that gap. The Bulldogs didn't need a lot of offensive line talent in this class, but you wanted to get at least one. It's never good to go a whole year without any O-linemen. And as a three-star recruit that was overlooked a little bit out of Washington, I think he's a really good get. And with Adkins, that means at least two offensive linemen are going to be coming in this offseason. it looks like the one need that they didn't quite get to on signing day is the defensive back position, particularly a junior college recruit. They've already signed four. They may bring in another high schooler that's been high on their list during this offseason, but they went after a couple of junior college defensive backs with offers to shortly after Mike Bell declared, and you would like to have another proven player at safety in next year's team that, looking to fill that spot. And right now they just haven't gotten that. So you may look for an overlooked defensive back or maybe a graduate transfer that can come in, make things a little bit less hectic and replacing that spot.
Right. And then the last thing for you, Jackson, it's a good recruiting class. We've talked about how the rankings can vary across the country about it, even within conference. But do you see four-star guys that were part of this class or mainly three-star? How do you view it all the way from December on?
For this 2019 class?
For everything you've seen from really from 18 to 19, the guys that are going to be coming aboard now that we haven't seen, do you have four-star guys in your mind that are coming in this program?
Well, right now they got Jalen Cropper. That's the big four-star that they managed to pull off this year. Going forward, I think they're going to be able to get more in the conversation. And it's been really hard for Fresno State or any Mountain West school to land those four-star guys unless there's a family connection like Derek Carr and Travis Brown some time ago. But Boise State this year has really kind of taken off. And it's just surprising to me because even in their greatest moments in this last 15 years or so, they never really got the big four-star recruits to separate themselves from the Mountain West in terms of recruiting battles. And this year they're kind of doing that. So I think Fresno State, if they can continue to snowball, they can steal some of that thunder and get some more of these four-star guys in California that are willing to go to the Mountain West and maybe stay here at home rather than go to Boise.
We'll see how it plays out. It's been a great couple of years on the field, and we look forward to USC on the 31st August. Appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you on Friday. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys, Jackson Moore, BarkBorg.com. We'll take a break, wrap it up, send you off to CG on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.